Introductions and identity have always been a bit of a tricky topic for me. There's always been this struggle of like where I belong and how I identify as a person living here and growing up here. So it's actually kind of a tough question, but I'll start with my ancestry. So my parents and my ancestors are from China. And they, I believe, are from the southern part of China. I don't know much past my grandparents. So, from what I know, my mom's side is from a place called Toisan. And my father's side is from Zhongshan, which means middle mountain. So, that is very much a big part of me is my Chinese ancestry, but my parents came here and I was born here and grew up here in Vancouver, and now I've been really connecting a lot more and thinking a lot more about what that means, what that means to be growing up here and living here, and in terms of when you think about like the first people here and then the colonizers and the settlers and in that whole sphere, I would be considered an uninvited guest. And I, in terms of like what that means, I'm still kind of grappling with it. But I feel like that makes sense to to know that, you know, to to know that we are settlers, that even though I was born here, I am not from these lands. And that sense of being, you know, someone who's not from this territory, like ancestrally, I feel like it's always kind of been there.
I think the thing that stands out for me is that there's no clean answer. Like there's that tension too that you're navigating and that you will continuously navigate, right? It also reminds me of like the randomness of where you're born. You don't choose. You didn't get to choose it,
right?
And and your ancestors also may have moved here, or like your family may have moved here for a variety of reasons. But yeah, so it's interesting, and I want to relate it back to belonging and how that position shaped your sense of belonging.
What makes you feel that you belong somewhere, and it is so much embodied in all of it. You know, taste definitely is a big thing, and when I think about like what you just said, like being born here and we're not able to choose where we're born. I just grew up here. I'm very grateful for it, you know, and having landed here, and compared to sometimes I think about if my parents had not immigrated and I had been born, let's say in Hong Kong, and what would it have been like to grow up and go through the school system there and all that. And I most of the time think I'm just grateful they did come here, and I ended up being a lot more, I guess, connected with certain things that maybe I like stereotypically think like Hong Kong people are not as connected with, like with maybe the outdoors or something like that. But who knows? I'm sure a lot of people are, but you know, we have a lot more access to that here. So there's things that I really love about having been like able to grow up here, and there is that sense of belonging to this piece of land, in that I'm familiar with the grasses, or like, you know, growing up we would eat the clover sometimes, like suck on the flowers because they were kind of sweet, or seeing the certain trees that exist here. So, you know, when you go travel and you come back and you are back in this place, things are familiar and you're like, oh yeah, you have that sense of in your body of like being home. And so I think that's a lot of what it means to belong or feel like you have, like when you miss it, you know, when you feel like it's a part of you and you come back to it and it feels right, that to me is like very much reflecting a sense of belonging. But it's also when we cook certain foods, you know, foods from our culture that we eat and we're like, oh yeah, that's the taste, you know, and you taste that and your whole body just like feels it, and it doesn't matter where you are, like, you know, you could be halfway around the world and then your mom cooks that and you're like, wow, that just brings me back. So what is that, is it belonging to an actual place, or is it belonging to like an experience, a people? Yeah, so there, it's so complex. But I do feel there is like a lot of familiarity that brings about belonging, that sense of belonging. But it's funny because if I go back to my ancestral lands, I've only been maybe like 5 times or so, I think, to Hong Kong. But there's a familiarity, even though I didn't grow up there, I wasn't born there, but there's like this sense of like, oh, I'm back with my people, and you know, there's just this like comfort in it. Even though they look at me kind of funny too, because they're like, who's this foreign person who like talks a bit funny and dresses different, and you know, there's definitely a difference between Chinese who've grown up elsewhere and people who've grown up like in Hong Kong or China. So, and it's very like real and it's very apparent, like when you're there, but it doesn't mean that it's very bad either. It's just different. And maybe it's this like stories that have been passed down from like my parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles. They're like talking about Hong Kong and what it's like, and then and then you get there and the stories are realized and right in front of you, and I guess, you know, there's a sense of belonging in that also.
The thing that stood out for me was, you know, how you're describing this rootedness to the ground, but also how that we have an ability to pack it up and move with it because of culture, and how that translates in different spaces, or how you can bring your culture to different spaces and still express your identity even if you're not belonging to that place, right? And so that the ability to taste your food and form these memories through stories or through lived experience is what has helped shape a sense of belonging for you. And I like that quality of belonging so much, that you can travel with it. You can create your own little safe space of comfort through rituals and practices that you do every day in your own home.
Yeah.
And so is there a ritual or practice that you do?
Not every day, really. There's lots that I wish I was a little more disciplined in, like, practicing. But when I smell incense, like the type that my parents would burn for the ancestors, when I smell that particular incense, I just get brought back to a place where I feel like I belong. And to me, like, it's still very much connected with culture, I guess. You know, like, does culture have to be a part of belonging? How big is it? How can you feel like you belong somewhere if you're not really part of that culture? For me, it's very much connected. Like, yeah, cultural things like the burning of the incense or certain smells of like food cooking, or I guess even some music, you know, sounds. Yeah, they all have this way of like bringing me to a place where I feel like I'm not my body is not in the sense of like, oh, this is foreign or this is stressful. You know, there's this like calmness and this like feeling like you're safe. I guess there's a lot of safety, that.
Yeah,
when you feel like you have that, it you feel like that you belong there, I guess. Even though like sometimes it's very much just one like singular, I guess, place. Like if you think about different households in this country where like there's so many different cultures around, I would feel safe and belonging in my house, but maybe in a schoolyard or something, I would not really, because there's differences or there's things that feel threatening. I don't know. And even though, you know, it's often like when I was growing up, I think being with all these other cultures and being in school was actually feeling more foreign, because it's different from my the way my house is, the language that's spoken, and you know, the foods and the, I don't know, maybe even like ideas and things like that. So I always felt I didn't really belong here. And I think it has to do with what I felt like Canadians were supposed to be like. So there's this like sense that, oh, you know, Canadians like certain things, all these stereotypical things. And back then there was not a lot of talk about like reconciliation. And so that wasn't even considered, like what are their similarities to the Indigenous people here, you know. It was just like, oh, you're from Canada. And it's very apparent when you travel outside of Canada, and then you're like, oh, you're from Canada, you must love snow, or you must, you know, there's all those stereotypes. And then when I was growing up, we didn't go skiing, you know, we didn't watch hockey in my family. So there was always a sense of like, oh, okay, well, we're not really Canadian. So how do we belong? How do we feel we belong? Do we belong? I don't know. Are we always kind of foreign? So there's this like, I don't know, a lot of grappling with that. But now I'm like, wow, I spent a lot of time not worried, but like just thinking about those things, and it didn't even really matter. Like, it was, I mean, this whole concept of Canada is just foreign and not real anyway. So why did I think about all that so much? And, you know, I wish I had known more back then, but you don't know, right?
It's different when you're a child too, right? Like,
or even, yeah, teenager.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you don't especially know. As a teenager, you're even more like self-aware of your identity and image, and how it doesn't match the image that's expected or created in this space of like, this, these are the people that that get to belong, and you don't look like them, so that must mean that you don't get to
and
belong.
You don't live like them, and
and it's reinforced by like, you know, how kids can be cruel and horrible and like bully you, and like difference is like, even as an adult, you're talking about feeling that tension in public space. Whereas that would probably be very heightened as a child, right?
Sure.
Oh, I don't want to be different. Whereas now I think the world is changing in a way that we are all embracing our differences. At least I hope so. I feel like it is. And celebrating other people's differences. And so,
yeah, for sure. More so. I think it might, like, it might be completely different growing up here now with the way that the attitudes are, I guess, towards like diversity and
everything. What do you think your relationship is like to the land now?
I feel like I have a much more aware kind of not relationship, but like just more aware about what that means to be connected to land and to this land. And I'm just learning more and more like about how humans like exist in relationship with the earth, and really respect the Indigenous wisdoms and you know, feel like that's really how humanity needs to go forward, is like learning how to live in that way, in that sustainable reciprocal way with the earth. And I guess before, like, I mean, I just didn't put as much thought into it, but now that I do, it is like the single most important thing, to be able to live on the land in harmony, and as humans, like, know what that means to respect not just the land but the animals and each other, and what that means to, like, how do we do that in this built up world, like, what do we shift, or what's it going to take, really, to do all that. So that's where the work comes in, I guess, and trying to figure out what we can do as a community, and building a garden, or like talking more about food, and growing food in a better way, where we don't, like, just deplete the earth, and we are more nourished because we're growing something that has nutrition in it, and, you know, and it's, I don't even know if I answered your question.
No, you did. We're talking about your relationship to the land, and you're also sort of touching upon my next question, which is, what does it mean to be a good guest on these lands? And so you're talking about nourishment, and, like, just some more awareness of where resources come from, and how we can be more mindful by creating opportunities for those environments to exist, right? Like this garden. Do you want to talk about this garden a little bit?
Yeah, the garden that's right outside our window, it's designed in the medicine wheel concept, and it is an indigenous garden that is home to some medicinal plants, as well as some food plants that the First Nations people access or have used traditionally in their healing practices, or for food. And there's four quadrants, as well as a middle piece that that has an orange flower garden, and that's for honoring children who have been through residential schools and their families, and just so we have that in the community, so people continue to be aware of it, and that we have a space for people who have been affected by those systems to come and heal, and they can plant orange flowers in there if they'd like, as well. So it's been really a great process for not just myself, but the community to plant that, with the guidance of our Indigenous knowledge keepers, and learning about the different plants, what they can do, how they like to live, like what soil and all that, and getting our hands in there, and also weaving structures around it. Like, all of it has to do with, like, being connected and using those natural resources that are around us. There's tobacco planted in there too, and we had the idea we'd grow our own tobacco, and we can dry it, and we can use it for offering to elders who come and help, you know, with teachings in the space. And we've actually been able to dry a lot of it, so it's pretty amazing. Yeah, so all of this stuff, and myself in my own home, we have a garden, learning how to grow food, it's not easy, you know, so, like, learning all that really does give you this perspective of, like, what it means to be really connected, what it takes, and, you know, all these people who used to grow all their own food, or, like, harvest or hunt, you know, we have lost a lot of that. All the skills, you know, what does it take to, like, have an animal and utilize all the body parts, you know, for your community? You can't even really understand until you are part of it. And of course, like, we haven't really had anything remotely close to that here with our community, but you know, we're starting with the garden, and we want to continue doing kind of food sovereignty work, and yeah, continue that work. So
yeah, well, I mean, consumer capitalism is at odds with a slow, mindful life.
And exactly.
That's a great tip. Like, I even just like the image, or like the idea of holding the dirt, or like what the I think that you said, how the
plants, your hands
like,
in the,
like how the plants like to live, like knowing how they like to live, and that's giving, that's really the respect that they deserve, right? We don't in society, like, we haven't been paying attention, or like we have some people, I don't
some
say
people
we,
have,
maybe
but
me.
Yeah, most people I would say haven't, like,
because
urban people, they just
you take for
not
granted.
That they don't want to, or they like, we just, it's the way that society has developed with grocery stores, you know, supermarkets, like, being the way that they are, and the way that our food is presented to us, like, hardly anybody actually gets to go out and grow it.
Mm-hmm.
More people are doing that these days, though, I think, which is hopeful.
I was going to ask a question about the how the past and future define our sense of belonging to the present. And I feel like you've talked about a few things, right? You immediately conjured this image of, like, eating those clovers with your sister.
I don't know. It was something we did.
Yeah.
And I think someone told me, like, oh, those are edible, like the little pink or purpley ones. And I was like, oh, okay, we'll try it. And my friends used to, like, pick the salmon berries just in the alley, you know, in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And we would eat the salmon berries. And my grandma actually would harvest dandelion flowers and leaves, and I thought she was, like, crazy, like, oh, this crazy old person doing something, like, weird. But now everyone's talk about, oh, dandelions can do this and that, and you know, like, they're good for fighting cancer and all this stuff. So I just, I really feel like that knowledge needs to be saved, or like, you know, we need to learn that stuff, that wisdom, that or we have that potential, we have it in us, we've been connected in ancestrally to the earth in that way, where we just hear the plants and we know, you know, what can help us and what won't, and but we've kind of stopped believing it, or just haven't been connected to the point where we trust that that's there, that's still there inherently. Like, I'm grateful. I have a partner who's actually very much outdoorsy, like, into, not that he studied it, and he just grew up in the bush. Like, he'd always go out and he just learned things. And he goes mushroom picking and just knows a lot of, like, different things about botany. So did his mom. I think she was an herbalist. And he's, like, told me about different plants as we, you know, walk around in the forest, and that's really piqued my interest too, to learn about that. And yeah, I think I'm very grateful that he's been there to kind of show me a lot of things about the world and the natural world. And then with my grandma, talking about just things that they use in soups, you know, in Chinese culture we do a lot of making soups, and like these, like, herbs that they put in for certain things. It always sounded kind of like woo-woo, like, what's she talking about, like, how could that help? But then now science has caught up, you know, and things,
or now we value other,
now we value
forms
it,
forms of knowledge.
Yes,
not just
exactly.
Western.
Yeah, so these things, you know, I feel like they're coming back, you know, like people are waking up to it.
The thing that you're talking about is, if I can paraphrase, you know, saving the knowledge of the past to practice it in the present so that we can share it with future generations.
There's that. But I think it's more than just saving the knowledge of the past. I feel like it's knowledge that we have, that we inherently, you know, have in our bodies and in our, I don't know, just that we're capable of, but have lost along the way. So it's not old knowledge. It's actually like still
embodied
present.
Knowledge.
Yeah. It's just not there. It's not out in the surface.
Like, we need to listen.
We need to listen. Mm. Yeah. I think that's it. Mm. Listen to what's around us and how, like, how did people discover that that plant could do that?
Yeah.
You know? Like,
yeah.
Or that, you know, that mushroom was poisonous and that wasn't. Like, they probably didn't just, like, eat it and get sick. Like, maybe it was that, a lot of that, but maybe there was also just, I don't know, this sense that they felt that the plant told them something.
Mm.
Or maybe they asked in the right way. I don't
know.
There's a lot of things that are just probably lost that we don't, or that we just don't hear anymore.
I love that. I love that you said maybe they asked in the right way.
Yeah.
So I'm going to ask you my last, I think that's the end of our conversation, and I was just wondering if you have any questions for me.
What's your sense of belonging?
This is a good question. I meant to start my interviews by situating myself a little bit, and I didn't do that, so thank you for asking. I think why I formulated these questions in a way that talks about senses is because for me it is so felt. It's not like, I don't want to say it's a specific moment in time, but it's like a general feeling of being with my family and being surrounded by, like, incense as well is a big part for me. But it's tied to like a banal act that my parents do every morning, which is like a prayer. Like, I'm not a religious person.
Yeah.
I've never been. My parents have been really cool about letting me just, you know, be my own thing. But so it's this idea of like just like the morning time, waking up in a home that has like the aarti, like the songs of God playing in the background. There's incense, there's like sounds of the kitchen, my mom's cooking breakfast. So it is very, it's like a mix of all of those things, and there's like the bell, and like there is that sense of like it being very rooted in home and in the past of my childhood. But I also think like the rituals that you're talking about is, and especially someone who's moved from a different country by myself, like having to situate my own belonging but like in myself. So like the idea that I can bring things that belong to my parents, photographs, you know, mom's like bath gown or whatever, like her stuff that she's like, this is ratty and torn and like throw it away, and I'm like, no, this is my mom to me.
Things
like that, that like two suitcases worth of like belonging essentially. But there's also like, you know, making tea and feeding my friends, and culture is such a big part of it. So I think a lot of what you're saying resonates. And and like the big reason why I want to do this project is really to understand how we're not that different, and like belonging can be found. But not that it's like deserved or like inherent. There is a lot of complexity in claiming belonging, and I don't know if I will ever claim belonging to here, but I can still have a sense of belonging, you know what I mean? It doesn't have to be rooted to wanting to own this space. Does that make sense? I don't know.
Like, totally. I can hear, you know, so many things that I believe are true, like in what you just said, and that's also why it makes it so sad when I think about the Indigenous people who didn't have their culture to grow up in. And when you think about how much culture matters, you know, and then have it ripped away.
Yeah.
And have somebody tell you, like, don't do that. That's evil.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what would that be like? Like, how do you really even...
I mean, it's fucked up.
I know. It's so fucked up. And, like, it can't even really understand how that can affect a person. It's like, if I was told I can't eat my parents' food or, you know, like... And they were not allowed to. So, like, they lived that. And it's so tragic. And, yeah, like, I would never really claim belonging here either, in a way, you know. Like, I think I feel like the Indigenous people are very welcoming to the people who have ended up living here. I don't ever feel a sense of, like, you know, that we should just all get out and start from scratch. But there's this awareness that, you know, that we are not people from here, that we should carry, and that how do we live respectfully with them being the primary
leaders
of it, you know. And I would love that. I would love to see that someday, and do what we can to, like, help that move forward, because there's so much wisdom. I would be down for living under that system,
for sure,
way more than the current system. So, you know, I know there's definitely, like, lots of challenges, and like, I was just in Hong Kong, and I think about, that was a colonized place for, what was it, like 100 years, whatever it was, the British, and then now it's actually been given back to China, but the transition, like, actually when it was colonized, the Hong Kong people were, I think, actually okay with it, like, after, I guess, a period of transition. But there's this, like, there was this pride of, like, being kind of Western. Remember my mom being a little bit, like, snooty towards Chinese people from mainland China. So there's this, like, thing that gets developed, you know, and then it's like, why are you guys being, like, that way to each other? You're all from the same country, like, essentially, but then now it's shifting. So, like, the British are not there. There's more Chinese influence. There's a lot more mainland Chinese people coming to Hong Kong. And I think the Hong Kong people are shifting to kind of embrace it a bit more, even though, like, they don't want that same kind of rule. So that's, like, you know, the protests and everything that happened. And I don't know how effective those were in the end, you know, but at least they protested, you know. They told them, like, we don't want to be silenced. We want the freedom in our press, in the, you know, but who knows, 10 years down the road, like, if it's gonna shift to the point where it just feels like another place in China. And so, yeah, like, just being there, I was just like, oh, wow, this is a country that actually was, or a place that was, where the colonizers, like, left, but all the results, you know, all the, there was no genocide in that sense that there was here, but it was, it's just interesting to, like, think about what it would be like to be given back, like, the land was given back, then how would that transition look here, and what would it, I don't know, things you just don't even,
it also ties back to that, the other thing that you were talking about early, in the very beginning, you were talking about the what if, the what if question of, like, what if I had grown up in Hong Kong?
Yeah.
How different would my life have been? What if the land is returned to its rightful owner? What if colonization never existed?
Yeah.
Would you and I be sitting in this room having this conversation?
Yeah.
You know, we will continue to unpack this for the rest of our lives, I think.
As we do. Pondering this conversation in my old age.
Oh my god, I hope so. I hope I leave that much of a lasting impact on you.
Well, I think this art piece will.
Well, thank you so much, Gloria. It was really beautiful and insightful. Thank you.